In an Antique Land is a curious book. It is not exactly an ethnography, nor is it strictly an autobiography or a historical book. It is an amalgamation of a few genres. It was written by Amitav Ghosh, a celebrated Indian author, in 1992. The book itself contains two defining narratives that are interwoven. One is an anthropological account of Ghosh's visits to villages along the Nile Delta, and the other is Ghosh's detailed training of the life of a 12th century Jewish trader named Abraham Ben Yiju. I came across this book during one of my courses as an anthropology student, and I was immediately attracted to it. Anthropology has a murky past. It was often utilized as a tool to justify colonial expansion by reinforcing a theory of race superiority. This book is important because it comes from a voice of an Indian, a former colonial subject, and an Indian anthropologist at that. It discusses Egypt, another country ravaged by empire. It talks of links between India and Egypt before they were connected by colonial trade. As an Indian anthropology student, this book is important to me because it talks of a world without empire. Anthropology now has undergone a drastic makeover. It talks now of cultural relativism, which maintains that no one nationality and culture can be superior to another because of our way of seeing and being in a world that is inherently different. This is an empathetic way of seeing the world and the other people who inhabit it. No one person is superior, no one culture is superior. We're all just different. So, back to In an Antique Land. So Ghosh attempts to subvert the hegemony that the powerful hold over history. He states that the only people for whom we can even begin to imagine properly human individual existences are the literate and the consequential, the people who had the power to inscribe themselves physically upon time. Ghosh clearly shows the unequal access that the elite have over the creation and dissemination of knowledge. This was true for the viziers and the sultans and the chroniclers and the priests of 12th century Egypt, and then of the colonial administration from the 19th century onwards. Ghosh identifies and highlights the unbridled influence that European powers have held over history. Ghosh supports his argument by stating at the end of the book that within the Western historical record, the unarmed character of the Indian Ocean trade is often represented as a lack or failure, one that invited the intervention of Europe. It is this very form of epistemic violence that Ghosh rebels against. In his book, he recreates the prosperous economic and social exchange that stretched from contemporary Middle East to India, undisturbed by European scholarship, military, and imperialism. It was a trade route that Ghosh claims thrived on peaceful traditions and that the European conquered not by economic means, but by pure aggression. It was this pacifism that history, at least that written by the colonizer, considers a failure. Additionally, Ghosh calls into question how the Janissa was supposedly rescued by European scholars in the 1890s. This forceful and manipulative acquisition of documents, the value of which was unknown to the community that they belonged to, was a pattern of imperial appropriation repeated throughout history. At one point, Ghosh states that even if the custodians of the synagogue of Ben Ezra had understood the value of these documents, they were powerless to prevent the act as the balance of power lay overwhelmingly in England. Ghosh traces the journey of these papers to Cambridge, St. Petersburg, and Philadelphia, all situated agreeably in the West. Through tracing the shift of physical knowledge, Ghosh simultaneously traces the shift of the power from the East to West, showcasing the interdependent relationship between the two. Ghosh fights against the essentializing and idealizing nature of the Western narrative. Ghosh asserts that Europe has always insisted on knowing the country not on its own terms, but on terms defined by them. The author strongly condemns these two extremes. Ghosh writes an alternative history to battle against essentialism that a dominant discourse propagates. Furthermore, the author points out the romanticism of Egypt that occurred by Egyptomania that spread in Europe, sparking an obsession with sphinxes and pyramids. Ghosh fights against that scholarship, an unfortunate outcome of empire, and strives to include other less dominant narratives. Ghosh limits his references to the colonial empire and its subsequent dominance of the region in a conscious attempt to provide an alternative to a history that was not skewed nor defined by the Western narrative. He instead engages with Boma, an unknown slave in his book, by carefully recovering his subaltern identity that could have been easily overlooked. Ghosh also recognizes the fact that his supposed protagonist is only accessible through the documents of his master, a wealthy merchant named Abraham Ben Yiju. Ghosh claims that even knowing of the slave of MSH6's existence was a miracle, as he was a mere footnote in most of Yiju's written exchanges, thus emphasizing how individuals without influence held no place in the predominant discourse. The author reconstructs Boma's life through scattered fragments, giving him a voice that otherwise had been denied to him. However, Ghosh performs his task delicately. He recognizes his non-objectivity in that of his narrative. He understands that he cannot be a transparent object, and therefore his representation of the subaltern will be inevitably distorted. Ghosh explores this openly throughout the book as he struggles with his questions of his identity and privilege. Ghosh is a product of modernism and of Enlightenment values. He can never alter this. Therefore, his account of subaltern will be infiltrated by Western or European ideals. He's an anthropologist from Oxford, but hails from the Third World as an Indian, a country and an academic discipline with complex histories in relation to colonial. Ghosh struggles with the dichotomy of his circumstance. He relates to the fellaheen at times, united by a fragile thread of commonality, but painfully aware of his own Western privilege at others. Ghosh recognizes that he possesses unadulterated access to individual nations and cultures as a result of gross inequality in power relations between states. This legitimizes his form of objective scholarship, practice rife with privilege. Said, in his book Orientalism, argues that to have been colonized was a fate with lasting and indeed grotesquely unfair results. It created poverty, dependency, underdevelopment. Therefore, empire's lasting impact is a creation of an unjust modern political landscape. However, there is more to an empire's legacy upon the modern world than just that. The idea of development is central to Ghosh's ethnography of villages in the Nile Delta. Ghosh shows how the villagers cope with the modern world, synonymous with the West, where modernity is longed for yet feared in equal parts. This conflict, in many ways, parallels to his own struggle in the West. Reaches a climactic point in an argument with a local imam. They fight over whether India or Egypt is superior in terms of science, military, and development. This is until Ghosh reaches a sad conclusion that in the end, for millions and millions of people and the landmasses around us, the West meant only this: science and tanks and guns and bombs. He concluded that the West had destroyed the centuries of dialogue that had linked them. It could no longer speak of things that were right or good or willed by God. It would have been merely absurd for either of us to use these words, for they belonged on a dismantled rung on the ascending ladder of development. This encounter affirms Ghosh's fears that he cannot resurrect a past wholly unstained by the West, for he is a product of his ideals, along with the Imam. The lasting imprint that the colonizers left the colonized was that science, warfare, and rationality are fundamental to development, which is necessary for power. Ghosh remarks of this phenomenon in another instance, when he is questioned at a wedding about his homeland and whether it also had rice and wheat, or did they cook on gas stoves. The anthropologist is at first puzzled by this questioning, but then quickly realizes that the fellaheen were never innocent of the knowledge that other places, other countries were more advanced. They were in a position of a serious engagement with modernism. Ghosh illustrates that the mental displacement caused by modernism was a concept created by the colonial empire. The fellaheen recognize their backwardness in what Ghosh describes as a ladder of development, and furiously try to climb it to reach the advanced heights of their former colonies.